All right, welcome everybody. Let's go ahead and get started. It's, I think, 10 o'clock straight up. My name is Tracy Pitcher, and I'm the Senior Vice President of the Greater Boston Region of Comcast. And here at Comcast, we are very proud to be partnering with the Massachusetts Conference for Women. And I personally am very proud to be the MC for today's session, the Hybrid Leader. Now, as I look around this room, and this room is pretty full, and you guys had a long walk to get to this room. So that says to me that this topic is timely and very important to you and relevant in your everyday life. And I will tell you, part of the reason I'm here emceeing this particular session is because it is too relevant at Comcast. And what I mean by that is at Comcast, we're continuing to do product innovation and leading and changing and evolving the technology that we bring to our customers' homes. And what that means is, as employees, you could be something who's designing, building the new product that's coming out, but you also need to be able to talk about, explain, share, and understand that new technology with both internal and external customers. So that's one side of it. And then the other side is, you may be working on a team, or you may be working as an individual, but if as an individual, you're working with or through other people. So the ability to have strong relationships that you can maintain that will ensure your success are critical. So here we are, in a world where you have to know and understand technology and be able to effectively communicate and work with others and have great relationships. And so I don't know about you, but I'm particularly excited to hear from this panel today about what they can teach us about being the hybrid leader. Now, you guys all have a program. And in your program, you have detailed bios of each and every one of these incredible women up here. And our thought leader for today is supposed to be Nicole Williams. Unfortunately, Nicole had a death in the family and could not join us today. However, she has sent a wonderful person in Jill Jacinto, who is going to step in and lead this for us. So let me tell you a little bit about Jill, because her bio is not in there. And you want to know about Jill, trust me. So first of all, Jill is also from Works, which is also where Nicole is from. And Jill is the Associate Director and Resident Millennial Career Expert, and she manages editorial, marketing, and business development for Works. Now, here's the fun part. She's appeared on Fox and Friends. Her advice has been featured in Glamour Magazine, Business Insider, Men's Health, Refinery 29, Yahoo Finance, and on and on and on. So I'm actually really excited. Let's give a warm welcome to Jill Jacinto, and she'll take over.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be participating in this panel because, as a millennial, as somebody who works in the career space and helps millennials with their careers, I can tell you this issue really resonates with me and other millennials I work with. This isn't something we learn in school, and with the advent of technology, it's so easy to hide behind our screens. You really need to make a conscious effort to build these types of relationships. You need to practice these types of people skills. You can't learn them by email, by watching a YouTube tutorial. You have to learn them by doing, and that's the only way you're going to build your career and stimulate your career growth. So I'm really excited to get to know our panel, hear their perspectives, learn about their careers, and share that with all of you. So right next to me, we have Dawn Dixon. She is the founder and CEO of Flat Out Appeals. Dawn, why don't you tell us a little bit about your career background?
Sure. Well, good morning. I'm really excited to be here and see all of you. Again, I'm Dawn Dixon. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've been an entrepreneur for 16 years, but I did start out corporate. It didn't take me too long to realize that wasn't for me. But basically, I've worked in the areas of marketing and business development. I do have my product here, a short plug, Flat Out of Heels, Rollable Flats. But I also have a software company. So yeah, Flat Out's for when your feet hurt and heels. So they're downstairs. That's another quick plug. But yeah, so just, you know, always coming up with new ways to solve problems. So I realized in corporate America when I was working that I was solving their problems and making them a lot of money and inventing things to make them a lot of money. And my salary wasn't changing a lot. So I decided to branch off and been doing that ever since.
Thank you. That's great. We're all going to pick up a pair downstairs at the end of the day when our feet are healing up. Right next to Dawn, we have Irene Lamb. Irene is the Vice President of Research and Development for Access Control and Video System Brands within Tyco Security Products. Irene, why don't you tell us a little bit about your career background as well?
Thanks, Jill. I'm also very happy to be here. Tyco is one of the sponsors. This is our third year. And every year, we actually have more people, and we have a male advocacy in the room. Sorry, Rich, I have to. He's probably our token male.
We all spotted him already, though.
Thank you. Tyco is, our division is headquarters in Massachusetts, so we're very proud to be part of the Massachusetts community. We actually have three major R&D sites in Westminster and Cranston. I run an R&D team that spans 10 time zones, 10 sites, and I get to travel the world. I used to work in very small companies and startups, and then I decided that's too much for me. Let me go to the corporate world. I get a 9-to-5 job. Well, I think I'm working harder than ever, and I'm traveling almost every week. What I will say is that Tyco has made a commitment in our Women's Growth Network to actually have an affinity group to drive not only equity, but diversity and inclusion. So I feel very proud to be part of that journey. And as one of the senior leaders, I actually get to influence the direction. So I'm really proud to represent both Tyco and, you know, the whole women gender equality. Thank you.
And we also have Egypt Sherrod, who is the host of HGTV's all-new Flipping Virgins and the top-rated Property Version. Virgins. Egypt, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your transformative career?
Can we just stop? When you said Flipping Virgins, someone said, what? Get your minds out the gutter. We're not flipping any virgins. Well, I will tell you my career, my journey has been one of preparation, blessing, and chance. And in that, I pursued something I was passionate about, and I have led a dual career for much of my life. For 20 years, I was a radio personality in Washington, D.C., in Baltimore, Philadelphia, and in New York City. But I was also, as we know, we have to have multiple streams of income, I was also a realtor. Little did I know that the realtor aspect of my career would take me through my next chapter, would also be the catalyst for me being on television, and now I get to live my dream, where I'm still pursuing my broadcast career, but I also get to empower others to own their own home and to experience just, I mean, anybody in here a homeowner right now? Anybody want to be a homeowner? All right. But coming from a family of very little means, most of my life, you know, we rented, hopped from place to place. My mother, for most of my life, was a single mother raising two girls, and, you know, we were in the welfare system when I was growing up. And my dream, along with marrying Prince, well, no, having an affair with Prince, marrying Michael Jackson. And I married Michael Jackson. I guess she knows that story. My husband's Michael Jackson. But that goes to the power of intention and putting forth the energy that we want to return to us in the world and in our lives. So I always dreamt about owning this mega, mega mansion, but little did I know I'd be selling them to Michael Strahan and Queen Latifah. But it's an amazing journey, like I said, one of preparation, because I was prepared for the opportunity when it came, and we know that equals success. Oprah taught us that. But also, what are the chances? And I still, after I look at the course of things that have transpired in my career, I give it back to one little thank you letter. There was a casting director I was in front of 2 years before I got the call to host Property Virgins, and I sent a thank you letter. I didn't get the gig that I was originally called for, and I sent a thank you, and he remembered that and said, it's a lost art. And so, yes, to this day, and you'll get one, and you'll get one, and you'll get one to this day, I think that we have to remember to say thank you, and handwritten letters go a long way. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Nice job.
With that, thank you to our panelists for diving into your careers, and now we're going to really dive into how you got to where you were and your perspectives. Don, I want to start with you. You're the founder and creator of Flat Out of Heels, which offers fashionable, rollable flats that are chic and durable for everyday use. You came up with the idea after spending a day at an event in six-inch heels. It's a great idea, but there are lots of flats on the market. How do you take your idea and set it apart from the rest of the pack?
I mean, with anything, even with yourself as an individual, researching
researching the competition was key. So the first thing was I put all of my competitors on Google Alerts. And it's a free service, and you can get an email every day about what they're doing. So I wanted to know everything about the business, what they were doing, what they were up to, media they're in, so I could stay on top of that. Then I purchased every single pair of rollable or foldable flats that were on the market. At the time, there weren't many. There was maybe three or four other brands. Now, since I've started it and I've done well, of course, we have lots of other brands that have come out. But I really just wore them. I read their customer feedback and seen what could I do to separate my product from all of the other products. And I came to realize that it's the soles. They were constantly complaining that these shoes, you can roll up and fold them, but you can't wear them outside. You can feel all the rocks. You can feel glass. They wear out. The fabric rips. It's not durable. So flat outs, we have hard, durable soles. It took me a while to find the materials that would be rollable, foldable, and hard. And then I wanted to make sure that they would be durable in terms of the fabric. So instead of gluing the fabric to the soles, like many of the brands that we use stitching, we're machine washable. So I just really just researched. And it comes down to anything that you do to know the competitors in and out. I know my competitors just as well as I know my business. I know everything about the founders, the business operations. I find a way to get a hold of their business plan. I'm like a super stalker, like, you know, and it really helps. And so that translates into, like, on an individual basis, if I was even going out to anything that I'm doing, like right now I'm working on a software company and I'm going to be in an accelerator. And I research and do very deep research on everyone that's in management at the accelerator, all of the potential companies. I want to know them inside and out so that I can know what can I bring to the table to separate myself. And then also when it goes back to Egypt mentioned handwritten notes, in our soles, I have a message that I wrote and I put it in the soles of my shoes so that when the woman gets the shoes for the first time, they read that message from me. And that just really adds that personal touch. Mm-hmm. And I learned the importance of this from a book I read called A Personal Touch by Terry Williams. It's an excellent, excellent book. Isn't it an excellent book?
I love that book.
It's an excellent book, and it's even more so relevant now, even though it's an older book. This was before technology was huge. And so everything was like, you had to write everything, and you had to mail your resume in, and you had to do phone calls. And now email and those things take away the personalization from our interactions. So if you could bring that back to your interaction, that can make you stand apart, because everybody else is emailing. And like Egypt said, if you send a note, you're probably going to be the only one that sends a note. So I try to make my product, and I want them to feel connected to me, even though it's growing really large, they still feel a connection. And I think that's also what separates it.
Mm-hmm. And speaking about creating that connection and a personal touch, Irene, you're a product manager by trade, so you can offer a wealth of expertise around building a product. And we can dive into that later. But right now, I want to talk about your career path and what you did specifically to market yourself internally and advance your role. Through the ranks. How did you present yourself and engage with your peers, colleagues, and management in a way that really set you apart from your office mates and help you advance?
So I started Tyco in 2004. And if some of you guys can remember that long ago, you didn't have an Apple Pay. You did not have a card that you can actually pay, not even just by phone, but now you can use your phone to get in as your badge access. So when I started at Tyco in 2004, after doing a lot of startups, they told me, this is an area we want to get into because we actually protect people, lives, and assets. All your badge access card, there's a whole back end. That's what Tyco does really well. And they told me that there's no one in the company that actually has this expertise. And they say, you are to become an expert. So in a company of 100 and something thousand employees then, they asked me to be this smart card expert. So like Dawn, I did a lot of research, but I actually became hands-on because at that point I was an individual contributor. So my advice and how I actually advanced through the rank was I became the subject matter expert, not just internally, mm-hmm. but then customers, some of our biggest clients in the world that we're going to go secure their facilities, their employees, and the visitors started asking for me to actually help consult and put in not only just our products, but just to tell them, how do you actually put in a physical access system because there's lives involved? And that's actually how I moved through the ranks. And 12 years later, even though I'm now a vice president. I am still asked to do that consulting, both on behalf of our company and on behalf of advancing the industry. So we talk about personal touch. I am actually an engineer by degree, and as everybody knows, the engineers, they don't like to see put them in front of customers. So I spent a lot of time. There's an old school course called Dale Carnegie on speaking. Mm-hmm. I took that. And I actually went and retook it again, because you can never lose the ability to tell your story and connect with people. So my recommendation is definitely take Dale Carnegie, learn the public speaking, and do that very well, because that helps with the personal touch. So be a subject matter expert as the first phase, and that will drive you, that will open doors for you.
So speaking of being a subject matter expert, Egypt, obviously you really took that and ran with it yourself. In today's super fast world, it can feel impossible to make your mark, but Egypt, you've clearly done that not once, not twice, but you managed to do it over and over again in so many ways, from realtor to radio personality to television to host to author. What is your unique value proposition, and how does that help you accomplish all of the many different hats that you wear? Did your value proposition drive your brand, or did your brand help you drive your value proposition?
Well, you know, it's funny listening to you, and I think we could probably all relate. No matter how many other people look at you like, you made it, she's the girl, she did it, you're still like, no, I still have so much work to do, you know. I still have so many things left that I want to accomplish, but thank you very much. And so the question was, did my value proposition drive, say it one more time for me.
You go back to that, because that is a trick.
Because I want to answer it very,
very specifically.
So
did your value proposition drive your brand, or did your brand help drive your value proposition?
I would say both. And when I say that, I was always very much into real estate, very much into broadcasting, and so it was my authentic self. And when we're building a brand, I don't think you should just say, let me pull something out of the sky and build on it. No, who are you? What do you want people to know about you? Because today we can spot mess from a mile away. We know when someone is being honest and truthful about their talents, their skills, and who they are, yes or no. And I think that's why social media has grown to be what it is. I mean, if you're not on social media, you're not everywhere, because it allows us to see who people really are outside of the workspace, right? Outside of the persona that they want us to see about them. And so this is who I am. It's what I love. It's what I would do if I was not getting paid. And that's how you should build your brand. What would you want to do if you were not getting paid, if no one were cutting you a check? Start there and then build on that. And so for me, real estate, empowerment, financial empowerment, it is what I love. It's what I go to sleep at night thinking about, believe it or not, and what I wake up in the morning thinking about, deals and clients, and, you know, can't wait to see them with the keys in their hand at the closing table, realizing that I did it, and then build my brand on that. And so television was another tier to magnify the brand that I was already organically building. Mm-hmm. But then when television took over, and now millions of people knew who I was from Property Virgins and now Flipping Virgins, then what happened was it started to shift a little bit, because now my value proposition is not only my relationships, not only my knowledge, but my platform. And so brands, brand partners, companies that want me to endorse them, clients who can now see me on television so I don't have to walk into a listing appointment and sell myself, they're sold before I walk in. That was my unique value proposition. Mm-hmm. And then add the book on top, and it helps seal the deal, because I'm giving people practical take-home information. So even if they never call me, I've given them something in their life that they can build on, some information. And, you know, I heard Eileen say earlier that she was the only person out of, what did you say, 100,000 people in the company who was the expert. And if you can make yourself an expert, the go-to person in any space, you will always have a place. You will always have a job. And remember, we can be a brand within a brand. You can be your brand, but you can be a brand within a company as well. When you see a red dot, you think Target, right? When you see a swoosh, you think
Nike,
right? When you hear, you've got mail, you think. And so these companies are brands, but within those companies, there are officers, there are people who are in positions of power who have established themselves to be that brand, that go-to person, that invaluable person on every level. Be that person. Figure out what is your thing. What is your personal brand? Because believe it or not, you already have one, good or bad. And that is what people know you to be.
That definitely, yeah, we have to think about that. And thinking about brand, Irene, in choosing a client or business to work for, how important is it that your brand fits theirs?
So I used to tell my team, and I still do, that culture is a set of operating beliefs that we follow by, but it's very important that it's beliefs. You have to have the same value system. So when we choose our customers, and especially me, when I actually choose to visit customers, I'm actually very exclusive, because you want to create not just a brand, but a brand within a brand. What I want is that when I go to these customers, internal or external, it means I feel that they share the same value and we share the same cause. Mm-hmm. And so when I come into work, I tell my team, I tell myself, and I definitely tell my family that I protect people and lives. So it's, to me, there's nothing more noble that when you come in to the office, especially with all the issues out today, that when that door's supposed to lock, it locks. When we're supposed to alarm, when there's a situation with fire, that we do the alarming. So it is very important that when you select, but you're going to say, well, we just started our career. But even within your career, you can choose. You can decide what jobs or projects you want to take on. So my first thing is look at what you do well and what you like to do, and let it be known to your managers and to your leaders that this is what you bring. Believe it or not, doing a couple of times, you start to not just build that brand, but you build a profile of who you are, and there's an affinity. The other people who have very similar values and similar traits will be naturally drawn to you and you to them. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say.
Mm-hmm. Don, I want to talk about how you're finding your clients, because you have a philosophy of meeting the client, customer, where she's at in a literal sense. Airports, conferences, this conference. How do you meet your customer, boss, or client where they're at figuratively?
That's funny. No, I was asked that before. It's like, what does that question mean? Really, so with Flat Out, of course, you know, we're a rollable flat, so we want to be there when her feet hurts the most. But I really believe, again, that women really support the product because they can identify with it the most. So the way that I meet her figuratively is just like being her and being her voice. And so the way that I do that, since my market is literally 18 to 55 and these women are so different in the lives that we live, I create marketing personas. And there's about 5 personas that really explain the Flat Out type of woman, from the young college girl who is going through school, she's going to parties, she's going on her first job interview, she's an intern, she's wearing heels like actively for the first time, whether it's out or going to work. Then it's the working woman. She's just getting into her career. She's on the go. She may be about to get married. She may be about to start a family. So her needs are different. Then you have the woman that's pretty much established. She's starting to be a socialite. She's attending different types of events. You have the woman that's just a soccer mom, we call them. But, you know, she's not working in corporate function, but she's very much so working in her household and in her life and with her children. Mm-hmm. And those marketing messages have to speak to her. So the message that speaks to the college student is not going to resonate with the woman that's commuting every day on the train and she's going to get her kids. So for me, I have to study my customers. And I have to, you know, of course, I fit in one category of that. But the ones that I don't, I really get to understand them to the point where I build a persona and I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, this woman gets up at 6 a.m. She's probably going to look on her phone like I do before I get out of bed, and I'm looking at my phone, and I'm checking my Instagram and email. So if I want to send her a message, I need to send it to her at that time. Then she's probably getting ready and getting her kids ready or getting in the car. She may be sitting in traffic. I can message her again at that time. Then she has a lunch break. So getting to know them every step of their lives and everything they do, that helps me to determine marketing message. That helps me to determine, you know, how my shoes look. That helps me determine everything about how I speak to them. And I have to be very deliberate about speaking to each customer where they are. So it takes a lot of research, again, a lot of research. And that applies to corporate America when you know, if it's your boss or you're trying to move into a different department or up in the ranks, really study who the team is, the core values, the manager, what are they like. It's okay to, you know, be a smoother. Like, if you know they're getting their coffee at 6 a.m. and you're there, like, ready, you know. So just, like, the small things. So that's what I do, just really trying to get to know them on a micro level and so they feel connected. Because a lot of times these big brands, they just throw it out there for everybody. And no matter how big that I get, I want to make sure that my customers feel connected and that I am really speaking to their needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely have to connect with your customers and also be a consistent brand for Flat Out of Heels.
Right.
And then speaking about being a consistent brand, Egypt, you touched on this a little bit earlier, but you are doing radio, you're hosting, you're selling homes, you're larger than life, you're doing so many things. How do you keep that consistent method and message along everything that you're working on?
Before I say that, can I just say I needed you last night in the airport. When I landed, I was looking for some flat outs. Just, okay, sidebar.
We're coming. So
meet me where I am.
Meet
me where I am. I'm in the airport
I'm
here.
I'm meeting you there. I'm working on it.
But to respond to your question about being consistent with your brand, I believe that at every juncture in my career, there have been mentors that I've looked to continue to build my brand and look to for information and wisdom. But several years ago, when I was first making the transition from full-time radio personality into television and then launching my real estate company, I needed someone to pour something in me. And I believe in the power of intention. What we tell the universe we need, it listens and gives us back, because it just so happens that that weekend I was covering the Toronto Film Festival for the movie Precious. Do you remember that movie when it came out? The entire cast was there. I was interviewing them. Never once did anyone tell us Oprah Winfrey was going to be there. And in walks a publicist who says, "Are you ready for your interview with Oprah?" Excuse me? Come again? No, don't you think I wanted to prepare for a month for that? But she comes in not even seconds later, and of course I had my groupie moment. And then when I got myself together and I had the opportunity to say, just, Oprah, how? How did you become, go from small town news girl to multimedia mogul? You are a household name. She is the mega brand. Mm-hmm. And we know when we think Oprah what we think of, empowerment, right? Living our best lives. How? The words she said to me were exactly what I needed to springboard and to have the courage to move forward for my next chapter in my life, and it was consistency and persistency. And that speaks very much to building a brand or being authentic with your brand. It is being consistent with your message of who you are and what you want people to know you for, being consistent, never changing the script. Despite how big the checks that may be offered to you are, sometimes you have to turn them down if they are not consistent with the brand. And then being persistent, even when things are looking down, even when you're getting more no's than you're getting yeses, you just cannot give up. You have to forge ahead with your message at all times, because eventually people get tired of you asking and finally say yes. So consistency and persistency in everything that you do helps, I believe, grow your brand in a very authentic in organic way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And these are definitely things that we could do every day in our careers, even if we're not running our own company. Can you tell us a little bit about how do you keep your brand, how do you create an individual brand within a corporate brand?
So there's many ways, and it will depend on, just like Dawn talked about personas, it will depend. It depends on your function. Again, I work a lot now mostly with engineers, and a lot of them are shy, but they are good at social media, and I bet you they all have Facebook. So I like to use LinkedIn. I think Nicole was going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. You have Facebook for your own home brands, right? You post things that you like, and you have a group of friends. Look at LinkedIn as a way to create your own internal brand. But be cognizant that that group is about your professional brand and your professional persona. So take what you do really well, what you love to do, and some of your special personalities. I came from a family of hard workers, so I'm naturally drawn to people that have a lot of energy and works really hard. You don't have to say you work really hard. People can see that. I'm all about a can-do attitude and empowerment. But really, there is nothing that I feel I cannot solve. And when you have that attitude, there's things that you can post There's things that you can write that shows that attitude. And of course, through all of that, you have to execute. That is table stakes. So if you say that you can do this and you want to do this, move through your commitments. Even if you don't get it right, it's okay. And it's also okay to make mistakes. I know that people are afraid to make mistakes, but that's how you learn. So how do you create a brand with an individual brand? Take some risks, right? Lean in. I love Sheryl Sandberg's book. Sometimes if you actually go tell people, this is something new for me, I might make a mistake, people are more forgiving that way, and they actually will help. And again, if you use Facebook for your own social media, use LinkedIn for your professional media. So those will be my tips of the trade.
But remember, they are one and the same.
That is true. Be very careful.
Employers will look at your Facebook.
That's true. Good point.
So speaking about your brand at an individual level, at a company level, Don, you are the company. So how do you translate brand Don to your product?
So since this is my fifth company with Solutions Vending and Flat Out of Heel, so I've always had to establish that Don Dixon is like an entity, and so no matter what I'm aligned with, I still bring the values, the quality of work, the knowledge as Don Dixon, despite with the whatever I'm working on, because I also advise several companies, so I have my hands in a lot of things. And I did that by positioning myself to be a thought leader. And I use social media to leverage that strongly. I went to school for IT and back in 2000, so I always had a foresight and a knowledge of like the power that the internet was going to become before it did. So I started working in digital marketing before it was a word and before there was anything like social media. So when Facebook came out and other platforms like MySpace and things, I was always very aware what I've said online, because it's forever. What you put out there is forever. You know, you might get mad at your boyfriend, your husband, and you start going on rants. And I see these rants when I'm on Facebook, and I'm like, ugh, because this is forever. Like, you can delete it, but, like, it's not going anywhere. So I'm always very deliberate about what I post, what I say. I always put information that's related to, I position myself as a thought leader. There's something called clout, and clout really measures your clout score is based on, like, your knowledge and your clout in this particular area. So for me, entrepreneurship is where I want to have clout. You know, I want to be able to speak on that, people to go to my pages and get information on that. I have a blog about, you know, just what I've gone through as entrepreneur, as a female founder, raising capital, challenges you may face building a team. So I want to just position myself to be a thought leader. Then I started saying, okay, I want to be a speaker, because this is a great way, again, to position myself and open up doors and really strengthen my brand. So first, I started volunteering, speaking at local things. It's always something to speak at, whether it's at a school or just, it's always something. And then it grew to where now I'm here today, and I've spoken at many places, including the White House. And that's just because when you go and you Google me, everything you see is along the lines of my brand. Everything that's ever come out of my mouth on social media, which I do have, you know, sometimes I want to say things. I get the urge to reply to some things. But I don't take a political, or I don't take a lot of positions on social media, because I want my brand to just stand alone. I keep those things to myself, because, you know, I have millions of people that could be my customer. I don't want to offend anyone, and I don't want to make my personal thoughts and feelings, I don't want to put those on anyone else. That's for my friends and my family and people that are close to me to know my opinions. So I really, you know, we take overall positions as a company about what we believe in, women empowerment, things like that. But on social media, I keep my voice just very consistent. I keep it about the topics that I've positioned myself to be an expert in. And that way, no matter what happens, if Flat Out were to shut down today, Don Dixon is still strong as a brand, and I can go to another company and bring the same skill set or start another company. So it's so important for you all. I mean, LinkedIn has been so invaluable for my career. I mean, I've met major partnerships on LinkedIn. What I've found is, you know, and this is a great example, a company called Market America. So Lauren Reitinger, I've always thought she was amazing. She's an amazing entrepreneur. I wanted to work with her. I didn't know her, but I reached out to her on LinkedIn, like just reached out to her, and she answered back. And over the course of 8 months, we built a relationship. We launched, actually, these shoes are our partnership we launched last December that I built from LinkedIn. And several other investors, relationships, employees that I've met on LinkedIn, people are responsive. You can get access to people, but you have to really build your profile, keep it accurate, post things. You can share information of you know, articles and things on there, but just keep your social media brand really clean. And that's how I've been able to
built mine.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that. I think LinkedIn can really do, excuse me,
wonders for your career. But of course, you have to edit yourself. You can't just put out everything that's coming towards your thought process, because it really can impact your business, especially when you are your brand. And obviously, being an entrepreneur, you're working so hard. You have a certain method that you take along in your career. Egypt, I wanted to know, what happens when you're working with partners who don't perform, who aren't living up to your expectations, and they have the potential for really impacting your brand negatively?
I don't work with partners who don't live up to expectations and who impact my brand negatively. You know, I think that's the best way to state it. I give people and brands and companies a chance to show mm-hmm. me who they are. And once they show me who they are, I believe them. Mm-hmm. So what I will tell you is, if you're someone in a position where you're running a company, is to remember that, yes, you are your brand, but everyone on every level in your company is part of the brand. Mm-hmm. And so for me, running my real estate company, people come to me because of what they perceive my expertise and knowledge to be. So I am the brand. However, when they call my company, who picks up? Are they saying, hey, how you doing? What would you do? Wrong number.
Yeah.
Sorry. And if you found out that was the right number, you might think crazy about me and my brand. Yes? And so we have, it's okay, laugh. It is funny. So what I would say is, if you're running a company, you need to make sure that everyone on every level understands the mission, the brand, and holds to the integrity of that. And if they cannot, then they've expired. Because you, at all times, you've built something. You know, you've poured your gut. You have poured your guts into this company. You're not going to let someone else ruin it because they don't have integrity in their work.
Right. And somebody else is running my business every day, all day, because I'm here.
Sure.
And that is important.
And so for me, I have buyer specialists who know that, you know, my biggest pet peeve is when people show up late. Because if I can be on time and I plan, then you should be able to as well. And I say that to my buyer specialists. If clients can be there on time, there is no excuse why you can't, because we're at all times supposed to be prepared. And if they know more about the property than you know, we've got a problem, Roger. So it starts from the top down, and then the customer experience is from the bottom up. And so we have to make sure it's consistent on every level. Is that me?
Been called out.
And I should be the one that knows, right? Okay. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. I answered that question, yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
That definitely makes sense. You have to, you know, sometimes you do get stuck working with somebody who is going to really destroy your brand, and it's just the best thing you do. You can't, you know, keep giving them second chances, because it can hurt your brand.
But I also believe in trial periods. And
yes.
So when you're hiring new employees, when you're staffing, it's not a 12-month term. I don't do contracts. It is a 3-month trial period to make sure, because sometimes on paper, things look fantastic. And then people come into the fabric of your company and you realize it's not so fantastic. And sometimes it's as much as just the energy. And energy is transferable. Would you agree?
Yes.
And so you can have a very happy staff who's working together and everybody's getting it done together, and you throw one bad seed in and it messes up the bunch. No one else wants to come to work. People don't want to see it or feel that energy. And so I believe in trial periods when staffing as mm-hmm. well, to make sure that there really is a good relationship, good synergy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely stand behind trial period type of contracts. And sometimes it's a personality fit. You know, it can be a bad seed, it can be a personality fit. And a lot of times with people skills, those are things that you might not be learning. You might not be showcasing your full personality, or you might be exposing way too much of your personality. And that's where the bad relationship is developing. So kind of talking about these personas, Irene, if we're talking about your customer in terms of their personas, do you think that personas exist within a company and corporation, and how would you manage them?
So if you're looking at selecting customers and their customer personas, the natural persona for customers is the size and what industry they're in. That's the natural persona you would bucket them in. Mm-hmm. But I've been spending a lot of my time internationally, and I've been spending a lot of my time in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. I've decided that if I'm going to be in the East Coast, where there's a perception we're less innovative, then I'm going to get an infusion of being in Silicon Valley and to be very innovative. And so in the persona, in where I am now, I get to select that. But as a leader, I get to inspire and influence. So there's a college graduate, which he's probably going to be embarrassed if he knows I'm talking about him. And he literally just graduated from college 2 years ago. And I've decided, based on his poise, his energy, and his willingness to take risks, I took him on a team and dumped him in Silicon Valley. And he is now a really, in 2 years in Tyco, he's have developed into not only one of our great customer advocacy, but he's building all this skill. And he's an engineer, he codes. And so I now, in terms of with a customer, within a customer, mm-hmm. in our industry, again, physical security, CCT cameras, intrusion, badges, there's actually a lot of innovation. People don't see it. You just see a badge, but you're now using mobile phones. From the mobile phones, you're able to look at, you can be integrated to where you travel, because we protect people outside of the four walls of the company. Not everybody's in an office anymore. So in that innovation, you need to go and partner up with innovative companies that are willing to be a little bit more, risk-taking, a little bit edgy, and willing to adopt new technology and help you. So I spend a lot of time with a couple of Silicon Valley companies to adopt some of our newer technologies. And then I decided that our profile of customers, and who I know really well, is the North American market. So I'm going to actually go to Asia, and I'm going to learn Asia, because I believe that China now is going to surpass the U.S. in terms of growth and opportunities. So I made it a mission to embrace a team, starting up a team in Shanghai, and I'm spending a lot of time just understanding the customer, not just customer, but the culture there. And it's very different. They don't necessarily have free speech. They don't necessarily have... they go through a system where they go to school, and they're very competitive, but they want you to be the same. So creativity and thinking outside the box is not very highly, it's not a high skill that they embrace. So here you are, you're coming with someone who they feel is one of them, but very much a Westerner, and very much saying, culturally, that's not going to work if you want innovation. So that's been an interesting journey. So when you talk about a brand within a brand and opportunities to build on your brand, I would say that there are opportunities overseas. So if you're mobile, take advantage of that. And there's a lot of opportunities for me for innovation. And really, Silicon Valley is still the most innovative in the world, actually, still the most innovative part of the world. So I am very opportunistic to be able to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. And that's great that you were able to really teach someone on your team these types of people skills, and he's in a department where you think, okay, I'm a developer, I'm an engineer, I don't need these skills, I have something else that I'm giving to the company, do I necessarily need these skills? And that's what you were able to provide for him. Thinking about these types of soft skill, personal touch messages that we pass along, Don, and you talked about this earlier too, about LinkedIn. What would you name our three technological platforms you could leverage to develop these types of skills?
Well, for the ones that I use, I hope I'm answering the question right, but of course LinkedIn, just because everywhere that I go, people go to your LinkedIn and look and see who you are really, and see who's endorsing you, and see, you know, what your company is, and they'll so that's been key for me. As I said, I position myself as a thought leader. I'm always putting out content. So I use Buffer. It's an amazing tool that I use to curate the content, because I don't have time to sit and be on social media all day. And my team doesn't, even for our brand. You know, we don't have time. I don't want to pay a person to job every day to tweet, post on Facebook, post on LinkedIn, post on Instagram. Like, that's a lot of work. So what you can do on Buffer is load all of that content on one platform. There are others that are similar, like Hootsuite and things like that. But I like Buffer because it gives you the analytics. You can literally load up everything for the whole month. So, for instance, for me, I always post news and information about women in business, women entrepreneurship, startups, Just anything that has to do with like the things that I speak on. So a lot of people follow me for the latest information on that topic. If you know, I'm sure people look to Egypt just to see, okay, what's going on in real estate, because they know she's an authority. So that'd be great for any of you to start to put out information and content, even if it's not all original, that just shares what aligns with your mission and your vision and your brand. I also use three. What's my other one that I want to give back everybody? I use so many things. What else can I give you guys?
Well, you also named Clout earlier, too.
Oh, Clout. So Clout, you go on there and you link all of your platforms, and it'll tell you what your score is. And the way you get your Clout score up is sharing more information related to what you want to be have high Clout in. So for me, like, I think the highest Clout score is like 10. I'm like a 9. And that's because I'm just sharing information that is going along with my brand. Some people, if you see on social media, they're all over the place. Like, they're just posting all kinds of retweets about crazy stuff and funny stuff. And I mean, it's okay, but like, if you, why would somebody follow that? It's like mess, it's static, it's noise. So you know, like, so Clout helps me to be able to really, really narrow in my message and you know, who I'm talking to. So those are three really good ones.
So we just have one more question that I just wanted to ask Egypt. What are some of the perils and challenges inherent in living your brand?
Okay. And I see Tracy. She's so cute. I'm going to wander. I'm going to meander up to the stage, and you'll know we're wrapping. But so I'll try to be brief. Is that okay,
Tracy?
I think that's great.
And you said, what are one of the challenges of?
The perils and challenges inherent in living your brand.
In living your brand. Is that people think that's all you are. And thank you. That would be wonderful. Can you hear me now? Thank
you're not allowed to be vulnerable.
Can you hear me now? No. Can I have your mic? Can you hear me now? That commercial was awesome, right?
Okay. Is this better?
Yeah.
Thank you. So I'm gonna keep it brief. But to answer your question, one of the perils or challenges is that people think that's all you are, is your brand. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to events, nonprofit events, fundraisers. I'm going to dinner with my husband. We're at the movies, and I get a question about real estate. And I'm thinking, hey, I like other things as well. I do other things as well. But at the same time, this is what I asked for. This is what I want. This is who I am and what I have to offer. And so with that, I never mind the conversation, of course. But since we are wrapping and we are talking about branding as well, please on Sunday watch the White House Christmas special hosted by me. It's at 6 p.m. on Sunday. You can tweet that out and Instagram that out. Whereas I decorated the White House and take you on a journey of that. And then, of course, in January, I'm hosting the Rose Parade as well. And so Flipping Virgins also premieres in January. Now that is branding. Thank you.
I love that.
So we're ready to move on to our Q&A portion of the session. So you'll notice that in each aisleway here, we have a microphone. So if you want to ask one of these wonderful women a question, please just start to assemble, form a line behind each of those microphones. I'm going to kick us off by asking a couple of questions. But before I do, and I really hope I'm not stealing any thunder, I was jotting down as you were talking. So here are the takeaways I've got very quickly when it comes to resources outside what these women said. Personal Touch by Personal Touch by Terry Williams. Take a Dale Carnegie course on public speaking. Of course, Lean In from Sheryl Sandberg. And then we talked about some social media tools. So LinkedIn, and then in case you didn't know, at 11 a.m., the very first LinkedIn session is going to be held in the Social Hub, so if you want to get into one of those, you could today. Then Clout, spelled with a K. Although, how many of you looked it up while you were sitting there? Probably a bunch of you, right? So Clout, spelled with a K, and then Buffer. So I just wanted to make sure you all got a chance to capture those pieces of information. So let's go back to LinkedIn, and Jill, I'd love to ask you a question, because you've put everybody else on the hot seat today. It's your turn. So talking about LinkedIn, so how important is LinkedIn to your brand specifically, and in your day-to-day management of this concept of being a hybrid leader, balancing technology and social skills and relationship skills?
So I'm a huge proponent of LinkedIn. We worked with them for 5 years, and if you're not on the network,
it's really hard for people to find you and learn more about your career because you're in charge of your messaging. You connect the dots for people. You let them know where your past has been, what you're working on now, and where you want to go. You can upload pieces of your work. You can be a little bit conversational within your summary section and really let people have an inner working into what makes you tick and what makes you really motivated along your career. And then also when it comes to those people skills and relating with people and getting to know people, because you can show that conversational side, maybe you're more comfortable within writing versus speaking, that's a way to kind of connect with people, sending them personalized messages, trying to create those connections, but then making sure that you take those connections offline, meet for coffee, set up a phone chat, do something that really makes you stand out. You know, don't just let your profile sit because you're not going to get anywhere just doing that without really putting those types of efforts in.
Great. That's great advice. And then a question for all four of you. Maybe we'll start at the end and work our way back up. So we've got all these attendees here today who I think have really been sitting on the edge of their seats listening to you. What two pieces of advice would you give them to say, all right, when you leave here immediately and tomorrow when you're back in the office, these are the two things you need to do to really be successful in this hybrid leader model that we're all facing? So Egypt, maybe start with you.
Well, the first thing I would say is, especially considering the time of year we're in, this is a great opportunity for you to start new habits. I would make a list of your circle of influence, your sphere of influence. That means everyone that you know that you've come in contact with, friends or associates, people that you want to know and build relationships with, etc. Send a happy holidays card. And then every quarter, send something to those same people. It is amazing. I mean, we say it's 6 degrees of separation. I believe that there's really only 2 degrees of separation anymore now with social media as well. But with everything that we are inundated with and how it's so easy for people to just text or email, to get something personal, and I think that that would be the big takeaway from today's panel, is to personalize your outreach. Don't just email thank you anymore. Send a thank you card. Don't just tweet happy holidays. Send a happy holidays card. People remember that stuff. They actually open cards, sit it up on their shelves in their office or at home, and it sits there for a month. And people come by and say, oh, so-and-so sent this to you. That was so nice. They remember you. So stand out from the pack by personalizing your outreach. That would be number one. The other thing is really be specific about who you are as a brand and as a business, and then become the expert on it. And how do you become the expert on it? Create newsletters. Send out e-blasts on a monthly basis. Make sure that your content that you're sending out on social media is consistent with that, as we spoke about earlier. Find ways to get yourself a little segment. Maybe you write a column in the local newspaper or local publication about whatever it is that you do. And then next thing you know, you find yourself on TV as an expert in that brand. And earlier we spoke about value proposition and leveraging where you are. When you can become an expert, now you have a brand to grow and you can leverage it on all levels.
Excellent. Thank you. Irene.
So building on, can you guys hear me? Building on what Egypt said, and get a LinkedIn profile. And if you have it and you haven't looked at it, I guess there's a session on how do you, you can go to Amazon and actually buy a couple of, some of them are even free, books on how do you build your LinkedIn profile. So tomorrow, when you go to work, go look at the LinkedIn profile and make sure you get some connections. So that's really important. And also look at who's connecting with you, because that also tells you that who's drawn to your profile. So that's equally important. For as many connections as you make, there are other people that wants to connect with you. So if you're not getting the right connections back to people who want to connect with you, you need to build your profile a little bit more. The second piece of advice is, and how I made it through my Tyco career, besides being a subject matter expert, you need someone to sponsor you. It could be at any level. So taking Egypt's advice on a personal touch, look at someone who you admire, have the same value, that feels that can help you build your brand or even help you with your career within or outside your company, and contact that person and ask them to be your mentor. So those are my two things for tomorrow.
Thank you, Irene. Dawn?
Every time I thought of two, she did the first two, she did the second two, but I do have two more. I would say do a SWOT analysis of like your life and then of your career. So strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And know, like, as far as for your life and then for your career, what are your strengths, you know, so that you can get an idea of what you need to work on for the new year, for the new habits that you need to form. Also, get a journal. If you don't, something you write by hand. Like, that's still so important to write it down. This is like, I'm a very spiritual person as well and believe in the law of attraction. It needs to be written down. So once you identify what your goals are, for me, every day, every few days, just start writing in my journal about, like, experiences, what I want, what my goals are, how things are going, because that becomes for you a guidebook for where you're going, but also helps you see your goals down in front of your face. And I read them over and over again, and it really is a call to action to the universe to respond, because the universe has to respond. Like, you put something out there over and over again, it has to respond. So for me, I write it down and I speak it and I read it every day. So get a journal and just start jotting down things, you know, so that you can, every time you think of something that you want to do or somebody that you want to meet or the mentors we identified, put them in your journal and just actually bring them to life.
So Jill, can you give us two? And then I think Egypt has a third one.
Mm-hmm. So what I would say, first off, is it's very easy to be comfortable and do the same old, and not really push yourselves in your career. So what I'd advise you to do is say yes. Be flexible. Take those chances. I mean, yesterday at 9 a.m., I got the call. We need you to be a thought leader for this panel, and it's very easy to say no and you know, be nervous about it, but I did it. And I'm so happy that I'm here, and I got to meet these lovely women and interact with all of you, and I've really learned so much from this panel. And by saying yes, that really helps motivate my career. And that's something that each and every one of you can do. It is the new year, make those resolutions. Another way to really impact your career, and going back to LinkedIn, I am going to do a round table at 3 if you want to come join me, where I'll dig into more tips and tricks on the network, is you're all meeting with people who are your potential connections. Connect with the people that you're sitting next to. You never know who can positively impact your career. And you're sitting next to a million, I think it's 5,000 women who can impact your career.
Excellent. Each of you want to wrap us up?
I do. Me and this microphone today. So you've heard all of us up here at some point throughout this conversation talk about being intentional. Yes, you've heard that. You've talked about us putting energy into the universe. And we're not just a bunch of namasteers. But this really works. I believe in vision boarding. Have any of you tried vision boarding before? And vision boarding is very simple. You go and get a canvas, you know, you get one of those poster boards. You can get it from the drugstore. And then think about what you want in your life. What do you want to materialize? Because we are visual people as well. And if you wake up every morning and you look at this vision board, even when you start to get off track, you remember why, what, who, when. And it gets you back on track very easily. I have been vision boarding for over 20 years. And I have my old vision board. I don't start over. What I do is layer on top. So it's blessing upon blessing upon blessing. Yes? So I got everything that I wanted for the last decade because I stayed focused on it. And I remember that this is from my heart, from my core, what I wanted for my life. Now what's next for the next chapter? Let's layer it right on top of that. And so I would say try it. It really works. I look back at my vision board from 10 years ago when I tell you every single thing on it has happened. Every single thing.
That's great. So let's start over here with our first question.
Can you guys see? Okay, yeah, it's definitely working. So first, I wanted to go ahead and thank all of you. You guys were amazing speakers. Dawn, you really saw an opportunity for a new business and kind of took the initiative to create this great product. And Egypt, you were speaking about finding your passions and doing what you love and doing what you would do without getting paid for it. There's always this saying that if there's an opportunity that you see but no one is taking initiative to do it yourself. I was just kind of wondering how you would encourage people to kind of find a balance between what it is that they see that they want to do, what kind of limitations they're seeing within whatever company they're in, and kind of balancing that with the passions.
You want to take that?
I think for me, like, so
I'm an entrepreneur, so I'm kind of crazy, right? Like, I just, it's like not all there. That's what helps me to keep going when, like, it looks like there's no way that I can make it. I just still keep trying. So limitations don't exist in my mind. Like, there's no limit. And it goes back to even when I worked in corporate. So my first job, I was working for Nationwide Insurance, a huge company. I was an intern first. And I was working on the intranet as an intern, helping them to build their internal communication system. This was back in 2000, like 2000. So it was all new. And I was, you know, again, I'm always just doing things I'm not exactly supposed to do because that's just how I am. Like, I'm just kind of hard-headed. So I was looking at the job postings, which were not for me at all. I'm an intern, and these are, like, internal job postings that I'm supposed to be just posting for people that work there. And so I'm like, wait, I want to do
entrepreneurs never make good employees,
right, like,
by the way.
That's why I don't have a job like this. I'm like, I can do this job. These people are not any better than me. It says 5 years of experience, but, like, I can do this. And so I'm like, you know, I told my intern, my manager, like, I want to apply for this job. It was like marketing manager. It was like, you know, making $45,000 a year. This is in 2000. So that was like really high. And she's like, no, this is not protocol. Interns do not, you cannot do this. I was like, okay, whatever. So that was a limit, right? No. But for me, no means not right now. So I just waited until the next week. Because that was like 7 days later. And so no was last week. And I just emailed the hiring manager, totally not acceptable. But he responded and he gave me an interview and I got the job. And so, yeah, I got the job. So it was like, if I would have listened to them saying, no, interns are not supposed to apply for these jobs. No, you need 5 years of experience. No, you don't have any, you know, this is not for you. There's people in the ranks that have been waiting for this position for years. It was like a management position. And I just took that chance. And I think that's why I got the job, because I was fearless. There was no no. No doesn't exist. I have a blog that calls, I don't care about your no, because I don't. Because I'm going to keep going. And so there's no limits. If you think in your mind you can do anything, you literally can do anything. And if you let other people tell you and shape what they think you should do or where you should be, you're going to just be right in their box. So the answer to that is there's no limits, and do whatever you want to do and be fearless. The worst that can happen is they can say no. And that's not the worst, because no means not right now. But so there's no worse.
Can I add to that? Getting back to your question as well, I would say the differentiator is follow through,
yeah,
as well. We were having a conversation in the hallway and I said to her, you know, how many times have I been around something? And I said, why did I come up with that idea? And she said, do you know how many people told me they had my idea? But the difference between Dawn and those other people is she had the follow through. 100 people can come up with the same idea. I mean, if you go and try to Google domain names for a new business, you get frustrated sometimes because other people had the same domain name and they bought it already. Well, they had the same idea. And then 10 out of that 100 actually do the research to put forth that idea. And maybe one follows through to the end.
Right.
And that's the difference. Be the one with the follow through.
So let's go over here to our second question.
Well, good morning, everybody. I want to say thank you for being here. My question actually is more for Dawn because of trying to be an entrepreneur. My question is, when you're trying to start up and you're doing that type of research, how do you know what way to get that research out of for like your competitors and stuff like that? Yeah.
Well, you know, the great thing, the great Google God, it's, you know, everything's there. But, you know, the thing about Google is you have to know what words to Google, right? There's so much information out there. If you don't know the vocabulary and the words or what you're looking for, you're never going to find anything. So, you know, what I did before I even started was I've identified who have already succeeded in what I want to do. And so I read their books, most of my books, Damon John. You know, my idols are Damon John, Lisa Price, Sarah Blakely, which I'm about to stalk her after we leave here. But, you know, I read everything about them to learn, like, their journey. And Damon's book, Display of Power, is a great book for entrepreneurs because it tells you step by step how he started FUBU and what he did and really bootstrapped it. So then I learned, like, words, and I learned things that I needed to look into deeper. And then I took a list of things that I need to learn, and I just studied those things. So I read books about those things. I read books about, you know, venture capital, manufacturing, sourcing, doing business in China. Everything that I needed to learn, I read books and I researched. Then I identified who are my competitors. And that's not really, you know, once you identify your keywords and what you're doing, then you can find your competitors. I found my competitors, then I put them on Google Alert so that I can get information every day about everything that they're doing. And then, you know, you can do patent searches. What are they, you know, what have they registered? What are they up to? You can just like deep search. And just, it's constant research. It's constantly staying on top of the industry. And with technology, our industries are changing almost every day. And so it's just staying on top of things that way. But books, you know, books are magical. And everything's in books. For some reason, we don't want to read them, but like I'm always on Audible all day listening to books. I'm reading books. I'm reading blogs. I'm reading, you know, Reddit, anything with information. And that's how you'll, you know, pull it together.
So we're way over our time. But I don't want those lovely ladies in the aisle there to miss their questions. So would the four of you be willing to just hang on the side and answer a few questions for folks? So one, you've been a fabulous audience. Thank you for your participation and engagement. And let's give these wonderful women a round of applause.
Thank you.